Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer here with us. Chris Check here with us. It's Flannel Panel, talking about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. We're going to get to some audio from National Public Radio. A National Public Radio talking to a New York Times writer about the Catholic Church. It was just too much for me to pass up. I almost fainted when I heard that it had happened. And the audio does not disappoint. At least I don't think it disappoints. And we'll play a little quiz game with Chris and Joe regarding that interview.
Can I say something about the framing of that?
Yeah.
So I believe her name is Nicole Winfield. She is the Associated Press, like, go-to, I don't even know the term, like the delegate for Italian politics and the Catholic Church. They got one person covering both of those beats. And, you know, she gets a decent number of things wrong, but overall she's not bad. But it's one of those things where, like, the standard we have is so low that if you had one person covering sports and they didn't play the sport and they didn't follow the sport recreationally and they only kind of knew what it was about, and they would, you know, call it, you know, scoring points when you get a run, you know, that kind of stuff, where it's even the little things where you're just like, you don't really know what
you're
talking
about. That's not quite how that goes. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of that stuff, and we've just kind of learned to accept it. Part of that, I know, is because, you know, legacy media is dying. But it's embarrassing. Like, they're not dying with dignity. Like, these stories.
If you're going to die, die with dignity. That's good.
Don't put that with Catholic Answers byline. Yeah. That's going to sound really bad in context.
I want to follow up on what Joe says, because I find this especially frustrating in watching motion pictures and TV shows.
I was just going to say this. So,
for all of the many, many people in Beverly Hills right now who are listening to Catholic Answers Live, I want to tell you, free of charge, my staff will consult with you on your script so that you don't make an embarrassing and stupid mistake in your film. I don't even care if you're making an anti-Catholic picture.
Just get the basic right.
We just want you to represent what the Catholic Church believes and doesn't believe and does and does
Can
not
I talk
do.
With you for a little while about
it's
the
like
free
the
of charge
It's like the Catholic equivalent
thing,
of the Amelia
okay.
Perez.
Okay, I withdraw the free of charge, but,
yeah,
but
right.
what we're going to charge
a lot of money in
is way less than you're paying for other consultants.
No, like, it's like they'll have a Catholic funeral in the movie and just all this weird random stuff is happening. You're like, yes. None of that happens at a Catholic. People just get up and say things and you're, come on, like, have some sense that's, like do you understand what you're depicting?
I very heavily don't recommend this movie. I saw it back in college, and even the parts I remember.
I'm watching it tonight.
Tonight. Boondock Saints. It's famous.
Oh, Boondock Saints. I know that movie. They kill everybody. They literally kill everyone in the movie.
Very violent. It's got, like, everything you don't want in a movie. But one of the things it has is, in the beginning, they're at Mass, and the priest does the Our Father by himself. Everybody, like, sits and is silent. And I'm like, how did you get something that basic?
I know.
Like,
just go to Mass once, and you would
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
Yeah, just like a little research.
You can literally, like, we live stream them. You don't even have to go to, if you're going to, like, catch on fire if you walk in the door, you can pull up a clip online or
just
literally show the clip to any Catholic and say, hey, is this what happens?
There are a couple of movies, independent of their opinion of the church, that get things right. You know, Otto Preminger, I don't think he was a Christian. But his movie, The Cardinal, it's excellent.
Is this one of those 1940s movies?
Maybe early 50s. Okay. I like Otto Preminger.
How did you not just assume that?
Well, you've never heard of Otto Preminger?
No, I've heard of Otto Preminger. I just never heard of this movie.
In Harm's Way.
I don't think I've seen that movie.
John Wayne and Kirk Douglas. It's one of the best World War II pictures ever made. Otto Preminger.
No.
The Cardinal's from 1963, so that's basically modern, Chris.
Okay, yeah. Well, what'd I say, 50s? All right. But that's accurate. The other one where Robert Duvall and Robert De Niro.
The Godfather.
No.
Oh, the two priests. One's a priest and one's a cop. Yeah, yeah.
Or a detective.
Oh, that's such a good movie. What is the name of that movie?
It is good.
And where he ends up in the desert at the end. The priest ends up out in the desert.
And it's
at a parish.
That is accurate. The scenes.
Is it called True Confessions?
True Confessions.
I think so. Yeah. Do you have like some way that you just look this stuff up? How does that work?
Yeah, I do.
That's amazing.
Do you have like a port in the back of your head like Jimmy Akin where you just plug directly in to the world's knowledge?
I mean, you guys are still of the generation that says, I don't know, and that's just the end of the conversation.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know, followed by furious tapping for 15 seconds, and then you're like, now I know.
Well, I think that's just the Christian thing to say, I don't know. When you don't, right?
But you do know. You just don't know yet that you know.
Can we just make a rule to tell you. On flannel panel that we... No, there cannot be any...
First of all, the answer is no. There's no rules on flannel
there's
panel.
There's no Googling for 2 hours.
Oh. I mean, I sometimes need to pull up the article that Cy is talking about so I can look like I've read it.
All right, let's take a look at this article. I just want to take a real quick look at this National Geographic article. The National Geographic, how will religious populations change in the coming decades? National Geographic apparently feels qualified to answer that question, so they gave it a shot.
Yes.
I just love how let's look into the future with National Geographic. If you ever go back to National Geographic in the 1970s, what will the 2020s be like? We'll all be living underwater and have flying cars. But National Geographic, give it a shot because you'll probably be dead before anybody knows that this is not right. But one of the things that they do predict is that there's actually not going to be that much change in the coming decades. I was struck with how little change is expected in the religious landscape of the world between now and 2050.
Yes. We're about a third of the population, and they say, yeah, we'll probably keep being about a third of the population.
Christians, you mean? Yeah, Christians overall.
Yes, sorry.
But there will be growth in Islam.
There will be growth in Christianity and Islam, but Islam will be the only one, I think, that's really significant. It's percentage-wise different. Islam is 23% of the earth today. They expect in 2050 for it to be 30%.
Yeah.
Christianity today is 31%, and in 2050 we're expected to be 31%. So it's less than 1% growth.
Now, some might attribute this to the somewhat aggressive evangelizing tactics of Islam. But I think
it's hard to get out once you're in. I don't want to accuse anybody of anything, but I think that might be part of it as well.
Or get in or die. But they're also having children.
Right. That's an important part of this. I mean, one of the major ways Christians kind of overtake the Roman Empire is just by having more kids than the Romans are.
Well, I'll tell you
Rodney Stark has really good stuff on that. He died recently.
He's great.
But He was seeing all of this stuff before National Geographic was. And we are seeing signs even in the U.S. So Pew just today had an article called Decline of Christianity in the U.S. Has Slowed, May Have Leveled Off. And what they don't actually say is the numbers are actually up. So if you compare the number of purported Christians, like the Christian proportion of the population went up from 2022 to 2023, and it went up again from 2023 to 2024, just, 1% each time, from 61 to 62, from 62 to 63. But that is not the trajectory that it had been on from 2007 when they started looking till 2019. And so we see this kind of uptick, and that may be leveling off. It may be the decline is slowed, but the reality for that is we see a growth, not just slower decline. We see the opposite of a decline.
I have to say one other thing struck me about this National Geographic chart that they made of the next 50 years. 31% just today. These are the numbers for today. And see if it strikes you like it strikes me. 31% of the world today is Christian. 23% is Muslim. 16% is unaffiliated. 15% is Hindu. And 7% is Buddhist. If you add all that up, that's 92% of the Earth's population. People are always like, there's hundreds of religions. How could you ever know which one? 92% of the Earth falls into five categories. So,
right.
I mean, sure, there's hundreds of religions. There's billions of people. But 92% of that, for some reason, that hit me really hard. Like, it's not that we're not actually as religiously diverse as people pretend.
No, and the religious diversity argument is a dumb one anyway. I mean, it's a very silly argument, partly because it doesn't understand the metaphysical kind of claims being made by different religions. if you think there's some kind of demigod floating out there, that may be true or not. It doesn't matter for the truth of Christianity, meaning the thing you call a god might be a demon, might be an angel, might be a myth. That's not a rival claim at the equivalent level to God is the one who created the heavens and the earth, because Thor didn't create the heavens and the earth even on like a Norse account of things. Right. So the real number of claimants about creation automatically goes down tremendously. And then when you delve into it, overwhelmingly, even polytheistic religions are going to say, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of these lesser spiritual beings that we call gods and maybe you'd call angels or demons. There's these lesser spiritual beings, and behind them, there's this one chief god who made everything. He made the heavens and the earth. And it's like, oh, actually, we're pretty close on a lot of this stuff, certainly compared to an atheist. And so the real thing, if you're going to make all the religious diversity claim, is all of these different cultures settled upon a pretty similar account of exactly what happened. And then you, as a 17-year-old atheist living in your mom's basement, decided everybody else was wrong. And, like, yeah. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like the preponderance of evidence. You can't be like, well, all of those theories are slightly different, so let's adopt this radically different one. It doesn't work like that.
What percentage of the Earth's population was Christian in, say, the 15th century or the 14th century?
That really would take some research. I'm sure there are demographers who have tried to figure that out, but I don't know in the 15th century.
Well, because you have the entire Asian continent.
I like that you're like, don't Google anything. Here's an extremely specific question.
Wait, you have not memorized the population of the Earth in the 15th century? What is wrong with you, Joe?
You know what? I was wrong. I was thinking it was going to be way lower than 30%, but Google's AI tells me it was 30%. Now, I don't know where that number's coming from. It's probably wrong, but there you go.
I'll tell you what, another thing that I got from this National Geographic thing, and then we better take a break and come back and have some fun at the expense of National Public Radio. if you love Jesus and you want to see a thriving Christian population, help the church in Africa. The place where Christianity is growing is in Africa, and the place where Christianity is facing actual violence regularly is in Africa. So don't forget about Africa.
Catholic Answers just sent books to all the seminarians in Tanzania.
Oh, you did?
Yep.
Well, I mean, beautiful. We did. I'm sorry, yep, I said you did, but we did. I'm glad I did that. All right, we'll be right back with more Flannel Panel, Catholic Answers Live, right after this.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features texts of daily mass, prayers, articles, meditations, art commentaries, and more, in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church, on the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN has its own official YouTube channel with tens of thousands of videos covering just about every conceivable topic of interest to Catholics. And best of all, it's free. Every day, EWTN adds new TV shows, live events, devotionals, homilies, and specials to its YouTube channel. Visit the EWTN YouTube channel today. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. All right, the fun part we've been waiting for has arrived, the part where I play clips from National Public Radio from my two friends, Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers, and Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers. And this is some magical stuff. Now, Luca, are you ready for this? This is going to be the audio board is going to be taxed now. You're ready? You feel ready? All right. I almost feel like I need to roll up my sleeves. National Public Radio did an almost full-hour interview, maybe a 45-minute interview, about the Catholic Church with a former New York Times reporter. The author wrote a book about the struggles of the last seven popes. It's called Jesus Wept, Seven Popes and the Battle for the Soul of the Catholic Church. The author is named Philip Shannon. And I have some audio from the interview conducted by Fresh Air host Dave Davies. And first, I want to play Davey's introduction to the interview, just to, and I want to get your reactions, you two. I just want to, you know, just react to how Davey's sets up this interview about the Catholic Church. He starts by describing the book and says it's about the power that the popes have to decide issues for more than a billion Catholics. And here are the issues that popes decide, according to Dave Davey's.
Whether they can use birth control or get an abortion or divorce and remain in good standing in the faith, whether priests must forever remain unmarried and celibate, a rule with little biblical authority that fuels a drastic shortage of priests and leaves millions unable to regularly attend Mass or receive sacraments, whether same-sex couples can be accepted in the Church, and whether sexual predators will be stopped and held accountable.
I'm glad I took my antidepressants today. He's got a real happy, cheery view of the Catholic Church. But what did you guys think of that? The popes decide all that.
Okay. First of all, they don't. And anyone who thinks that's the role of the pope doesn't understand the role of the pope as the Catholic Church understands it. The pope can't just be like, hey, murder's okay now. I decided. You can't just overrule the Bible. And that also means you can't overrule sacred tradition. That's not the role of the Church. And Dei Verbum, the Second Vatican Council document on divine revelation, is completely explicit about this. The role of the teaching authority of the Church, called the Magisterium, is not above scripture and tradition, but serves it. So the Pope can't just say, yeah, we're cool with abortion now. It doesn't work like that. Also, the claim that celibacy is fueling a priest shortage, from all appearances, is demonstrably false. Now, I know you'll find people who claim, well, if priests were able to be married, I would you know, join up. But the reality is we have kind of comparison cases. You have, for instance, the Anglicans, and they have married priests. And so you can compare. It's not perfectly apples to oranges or apples to apples, but you can look at places where they have married clergy, and it doesn't solve shortages, and it doesn't solve church growth. And the part about people being unable to go to church because priests can't get married, unless that was just a complete misspeak, seems unhinged.
Chris, what did you think of this?
All of this reminds me of that quote that's in the hallway outside. The Chesterton quote, because our studio is named after Chesterton,
right?
And it's the world tolerates.
Pays a compliment to the Church.
Yes, pays a compliment to the Church by not tolerating in her
what it tolerates
everywhere else.
Yeah. But did either of you find any maybe bias here about what's important? I don't know. Maybe maybe the only thing the Catholic Church is concerned about is sex. I think every single item.
The so-called pelvic issues, right?
Yeah. It
turns out all that the Church can do, all the Pope can do, is regulate what forms of sexual expression you can undertake. It shows a unique kind of monomaniacal focus, not by the Church.
No,
you know, it's always the people who are obsessed with sex who are like, why is the Church so obsessed with sex? And it's like, we can go a very long time without talking about sexual issues if everybody just follows some pretty basic rules.
I know, right.
All right, so we're much more interested in the person of Jesus Christ, but you don't want to talk about him.
All right, Dave Davies, the host of Fresh Air. I want to play.
Is Dave Davies a lapsed Catholic? Is he?
I don't know. I don't know what he is. I have no idea.
Well, I mean, this is the other thing. It would not surprise me to learn that he is. But my question is, why does he care? If he's not a Catholic.
This is something that amazes me. Is why, like, people say, well, the Catholic Church, won't allow, I don't know, women priests or something. Like, or won't allow, or used to only have Latin, and some of them want to bring Latin back. Why do you care about that? You're not a Catholic.
Well, yeah, right.
Why does that interest you? Like, those are interesting things, but why does it interest you? Like, you're a secularist working for NPR. Why do you care?
Yeah.
If someone else speaks Latin, it's not going to do anything to you.
Well, it's striking, too, because it really is Catholicism that is singled out in this way, which I think is a sign that it is the true faith.
Yes.
Because, look, you'll find plenty of practices that don't sit comfortably with the liberal politics of the NPR or the New York Times within, say, Islam, or even within Orthodox Judaism. You know, you've got gender separation where men and women don't sit together. That sort of thing. If the Catholic Church was doing that, you would hear about that on the news.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
right.
And people who are not Catholic, have never darkened the door of a Catholic church, or maybe haven't since they were baptized as a baby, would feel very qualified to tell the church how to do things.
Yeah.
And it is kind of striking, A, that they feel that level of comfort, and B, that they feel that uniquely with Catholicism. And in a way, I'm glad they do, because if they feel a sense of belonging with the church, it's because that's where they should be.
Oh, their conscience is pricked. This is why.
Well, let me go on. It's, what you're saying does remind me of Lenny Bruce's old thing. You know, Lenny Bruce, very secular.
Yeah, there's only one the church.
Yeah, he's like, everybody knows what the church is. There's only one the church. Right. It's the Catholic Church. All right, so here's
I got that line from Dorothy Day's diary, by the way. Her journal, she records that Lenny Bruce line. And I thought, yeah,
I love the fact that Dorothy Day was, was she at a Lenny Bruce show? I bet she was.
I don't know.
Probably smoking in the back. All right. This is Davey's description of what the book Jesus Wept by New York Times writer Philip Shenon. Here's Davey's description of the book.
Shenon's book is the story of a bold attempt to reform the church in the early 1960s. And decades of backsliding that followed under pontiffs more comfortable with conservative traditions and power concentrated in the Vatican.
First of all, NPR, could we get the microphones out of the back of people's throats? I am so tired of hearing the inner mouth workings of NPR reporters.
It's part of the unique aesthetic. It's like lo-fi in the 90s.
Darren said to me, like, if you were going to do a parody of what a secular person thinks of the Catholic Church, if you were going to do like a Saturday Night Live parody of, they think there was this attempt at reform in the 1960s and then all these evil popes went back on it. Like, this is like a parody. Did I get that right, Darren? Yeah, okay.
I mean, it seems like there's another thesis that would work just as well, which is there were some naive liberal priests who thought they could overturn something Christ had established, and they couldn't.
Charlie Curran.
Found that out the hard way.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, you know, power that stopped them. It wasn't anything like that.
Chris, is the mic on? I just want to make sure we got it. Okay. Sorry. I didn't know. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. No. Oh, I was just going to say, it wasn't power that stopped. It wasn't like, oh, they, you know, the vast majority of bishops and priests really want to, I don't know, have abortions or something. It's like, no. This is something that even flirting with, you know, overturning moral teachings led to a huge scandal, led to a loss of Catholics in the pews, and was never going to succeed because the gates of hell won't overcome.
Well,
and I understand if someone isn't Catholic doesn't get that, but to describe this as backsliding is really putting not just a thumb on your scale, like it is
just
sitting down on the scale.
Yeah. Chris?
So something did take place, however.
In the 1960s.
So I think of guys like Michael Novak, for example, Charlie Curran, who were successful in promoting contraception and a concerted effort prior to the release of Humanae Vitae to lobby priests to say that contraception is okay, to say it in the confessional, to absolve people of their guilt in this regard or whatever it was. And that has continued
to today. He's not wrong about that.
Yeah. So the truth is, Mr. Davies, would that there were more of the backsliding.
I will stand up for there being what he calls backsliding. I mean, if you look in the numbers.
Oh, you could.
No, he's talking, like when he said, just to be clear, when he says backsliding, he means that Pope John Paul II.
Yes, and Benedict.
Inherited a church that was ready for this Vatican II flowering and becoming a new church, and he backslid back into conservative darkness.
Right.
That's what he's talking about when he says backslid.
If you look at the numbers, it is literally closer to the opposite of that, meaning the people in the pews and the priests, when you press them on what they think about things, tend to be pretty conservative. And especially if you look at newly ordained priests under 45.
I think this is changing right now, Joe. But if we were having this conversation 10 or 15 years ago, I don't think that would be...
It's an ongoing story. So in the 1960s, 68% of priests self-reported as progressive in the U.S.
Right.
Priests ordained in the 1960s, even now, 68% of them self-describe as progressive. And from the end of the 1960s, every five-year cohort after that has become more conservative.
Yes.
So that 68% number is now under 1% for the priests ordained in the last 5 years.
But it's weird that being progressive in the 60s was totally different than being progressive now.
Right. It's very tricky to know what someone means by it, because they looked at both political and theological. So theological progressives went from 68% to under 1%. Who think they can change church teaching. Now, you also see a sea change in politics, but I'm not worried about the political shift. I'm worried about can we change the church teaching on abortion, contraception, and all the other, you know, liberal darlings?
Divorce and contraception are something of a litmus test here. It is very unusual to hear a sermon on a Sunday about divorce, even more unusual to hear one about contraception.
I almost never have heard those.
Even from this cohort that Joe is describing as increasingly, and I don't like the word, and I'm not blaming Joe for using it because that's what the surveys say, conservative. Right. I would just say orthodox but it's the effect of not what the Council Fathers wanted, but of people who ran with one interpretation of it, we're still living with.
I'll tell you what I did. I took Davey's questions for the author, Philip Chenon, and I bumped them out, and I'm going to play the questions for you and then quiz you on what you think the answer will be, and then I will play you the answer. So I turned this whole thing into a quiz. We'll do that quiz right after this on Catholic Answers Live. Have you ever wondered about the mysterious, even obscure aspects of the Catholic faith? Dive into the Jimmy Akin podcast, where Jimmy brings together information from many fields as he pushes the boundaries of apologetics. Tune in today to the Jimmy Akin podcast, Mysteries of the Faith, a highly entertaining, informative, and at times humorous show that will help you grow in your faith. Visit JimmyAkinPodcast.com today to subscribe.
Lots of people have big questions about Catholicism. It needs a big book of answers, and now it's got one. The Big Book of Catholic Answers is filled with helpful replies to more than 250 questions about the faith. Questions about God, salvation history, the Creed, the Bible, the list goes on and on. Order your copy of the Big Book of Catholic Answers today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
What was the church like in its infancy? In a word, Catholic. And Joe Heschmeyer has the receipts. In his best-selling book, The Early Church Was the Catholic Church, he gives you the details from the historical records of the first two centuries of Christianity. Right now, get a copy for just $10, plus free shipping if you live in the continental United States. Get more information and order The Early Church Was the Catholic Church at theearlychurchwascatholic.com.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Anybody who knows me knows how much I love National Public Radio. If you're not in the United States and you need a description of National Public Radio, let me attempt one now. We have a radio network in the United States, paid for in large part by the tax dollars of American citizens, which is basically communist. How did I do? Did that... Did that sum up National Public Radio?
I give the communists more credit.
It's not quite. Yeah, it doesn't quite have the intellectual heft of communism.
Yeah,
does it?
No, it's sort of juvenilia.
that reports everything from the perspective of transgenderism for the last 5 years. But this one, not so much. Dave Davies is doing an interview with a former New York Times reporter who wrote a book called Jesus Wept, Seven Popes and the Battle for the Soul of the Catholic Church. It's a very dramatic book. Basically, the premise of the book is that the church had a chance in the 1960s to fix all this stupid stuff, like doing what Jesus said, and they could have done what they wanted. And but we didn't. We backslid into things like, I don't know, morality. I want to do a little quiz now. And here's how it goes. Basically, the format of Davies' interview from here on out is he asks this New York Times reporter about each of the popes. And so he has a little set of questions he has for each of the popes. So I'm not going to do all of the popes. It's too much to do seven in the amount of time we've got to do. But let's start with John the 23rd. And Davies asks about Pope John the 23rd. And he just simply asks this question. What did he do? Here's your ABC answer. What does this New York Times reporter report that Pope John the 23rd did? He says he is the hero of this book because he invited the world's bishops to remake the church as they saw fit. That's A. B. He is the hero of this book because he strove to reform the liturgy. C. He is the hero of this book because he tried to overturn centuries of sexual repression. A, B, or C, gentlemen, which one do you think the New York Times reporter is going to say?
I'm going to go C also.
He's the hero of this book because he tried to play the sound effect. And that's the wrong sound effect anyways, because they both got it wrong. Play the clip.
Oh, is it A?
Play the clip.
Well, he's really the hero of this book, but he is this roly-poly Italian man, balding, treasures his peasant roots, who suddenly finds himself thrust into the leadership of the Roman Catholic Church. And he makes clear from the very start that, as you say, the grim sobriety of Pius's reign is over. He loves telling jokes. He loves mocking the idea of an infallible pope. He is really a blank slate when he's elected in terms of doctrinal matters. But he quickly makes clear that he's ready to overhaul the Catholic Church. He's ready to invite the world's bishops to come to Rome to remake it as they see fit without his interference.
But Pope John Paul is the hero of the book because he invites the world's
bishops.
Pope John the 23rd, yeah. Because he invites the world bishops to come to Rome to remake it, the church, as they see fit without his interference. Is this a fair characterization of the roly-poly pope?
It is not. He's a saint, by the way, now.
Yeah, Saint John Paul. Yeah. Saint John the 23rd.
He certainly carries on and continues with the social teaching that, begins in the modern age with Leo the 13th. He does convene the council, but not to remake the church.
It's always striking to me, like the people who tell this story, who they put in kind of the role. And John the 23rd is a nice one to do because he dies partway through the council. So
really, after year one, he's early. He dies after year one of the council.
That's right. And so it's easy to make him a sort of blank slate to project all of your wishes and like fantasies onto.
Right.
Have to say, well, in reality, he didn't implement it the way I would have implemented him, like you do with Paul VI. You know, St. Paul VI, he takes the council and he implements it. And everything looks good on paper. And when you actually do it in practice is when things get really tough.
The other thing about this fellow is he kind of makes it sound as if they found John the 23rd on a farm somewhere.
Yeah, they went out and they just found this guy. I don't know how they got him to be Pope.
And he's completely blindsided. Now, I actually am largely ignorant of the ecclesial career of John the 23rd, but I'm guessing he probably held some rather significant offices.
He was a Vatican diplomat. He had been stationed as an
was he
annuncio.
In Turkey? He was in Turkey?
Paris? I don't know if he was in Turkey.
I know Paul VI was in Turkey. He was milking a cow.
Yeah, and they said, hey, could you be Pope?
You're Pope now. Yeah.
He was Patriarch of Venice, which is a very prominent role.
And worldly. Yes.
Yeah. So
he'd been, I've got his career right here. I don't just know it offhand. He'd been the apostolic delegate to Turkey, then to Greece.
I got Turkey.
Good, very
you
good.
You did.
Yeah. Yes. And I did not use Google.
Do you know his famous comment to a woman in Paris who was at a reception with him wearing a miniskirt? Have you ever heard of it? Oh, it's a lovely dress, ma'am. Where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
He was a funny guy. He was a very funny guy. All right. So Davies now wants to know about the Latin Mass. Because this is the sign that you're a real regressive, if you're interested in Latin.
Guilty.
So they spend quite a bit of time on the Latin Mass. And what did the author of this book discover about Jesus that drove home for him that the Mass should not be in Latin? He made a discovery in his research for the book. Was it A?
I think I can guess this one.
Was it A? It was harming evangelization efforts. Having the Mass exclusively in Latin was harming evangelization efforts. Was it B? There was some danger of people not fully participating in the Mass. Or was it C? Jesus didn't speak Latin with the apostles. Which reason does this New York Times author give for his becoming convinced that the Latin Mass had to go?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that after all of his years of careful research, he discovered that Jesus did not speak Latin.
Really?
Someone goes, no. with his apostles.
He didn't speak Latin with the apostles, yeah.
He probably spoke Latin with Pilate.
I mean, it's right there in the movie.
Yeah.
All right, let's have clip four, and we will find out what did this intrepid reporter find out about the history of the Catholic Church that convinced him the Latin Mass had to go.
Something that I learned in the course of this that I hadn't really understood before is that, you know, Jesus did not speak to his disciples in Latin. He spoke to them in Aramaic, which was similar to Hebrew.
Gosh.
And then for 300 years after the crucifixion, the language of the church was Greek. And it's only in the 4th century when
practically
church power
yesterday
moves to Rome
yeah.
that Latin is introduced.
Wait. What did he say happened in the 4th century?
The church power moved to Rome, and then Latin was introduced.
Yeah.
That's poorly said, but you get the idea.
I mean, it's not true, but it's less untrue
than the Pope was on a farm.
Veni, Vidi, Vici, and with the apostles.
Right.
You know what? I'll take his narrative at face value, twisted as it is. The 4th century was a long time ago.
Yes, I realize that. I realize that.
So there has been an established tradition of Latin being the language of the church for a very, very long time.
But I think it's funny that he discovered in his research that Jesus didn't speak Latin.
No,
what is that? That's weird. Like,
if I decided to write a book about Wall Street and said in an interview, I discovered there are these things called calls and puts.
Yes.
And they're not like in baseball at all.
No.
And you'd just be like, okay, this person is clearly unqualified to write a book.
Right.
Like this is a child's understanding. Like, I got into a debate with my five-year-old. I didn't win it somehow. I got into a debate with my five-year-old as to whether the angel Gabriel said to Mary, hallowed be your name or the fruit of thy womb or the fruit of your womb. There it is.
Oh, it's thy.
Not even the right person.
Yeah, it's thy for sure.
And she's like, well, sister told me at school that it was your womb. Oh. But in our prayer, we say thy womb. So I want to switch it. And so I had to explain to her at five, this wasn't originally said in English. And that's understandable. But this man sounds much older than five.
Yeah.
He does. I mean, just by the depth of the tone of voice, yes.
Right.
But by the expertise, not really.
He should know the Greek and Latin thing. I mean, I understand if you don't know all the ins and outs that the eastern half of the empire was speaking Greek and the western half was speaking Latin. And
right.
All of that. I mean, I get that. But if you think that the apostles in first century Palestine were speaking Latin, it reminds me of an old story that I want to say Monsignor Ronald Knox shared, where they were asking for Catholic priests in one of the two world wars and in the British army. And they said, well, what about the French priests? Can't you just confess to them? And they said, no. I mean, how are they going to hear our confessions? And they said, well, don't you just make them in Latin? And they just assumed like every Irish GI knew enough Latin to confess his sins, just like number and kind, all in Latin. And it's just like, well, you hear these things and you think, okay, maybe they're not malicious. Maybe they're just woefully ignorant.
Yeah, but the woeful ignorance combined with the solemn
tone
of
uncovering
hard truths is really sort of devastating. All right, when we come back, I want to ask you, Dave Davies asked the author of Jesus Wept why Pope Paul VI was so against modern sexual immorality. And what's the answer? We'll find out right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, this is Father Mike Schmitz. Please join me for Ascension's Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year here on EWTN Radio. We're going through the entire Bible and the Catechism in 365 days. If you've ever wanted to understand what it means to be Catholic and allow those truths to shape your life, this is for you.
Bible in a Year and Catechism in a Year with Father Mike Schmitz. Tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on EWTN Radio.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger? Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul? And that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come. At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 1 year and 2 months from right now, Catholic Answers is taking a Rhine River cruise pilgrimage. Going to visit lots of medieval and later than medieval Christian holy sites. We're going to have a great time together. We're all on a boat together. There is no one else on the boat. The whole boat is reserved for Catholic Answers folks. Joe's going to be there. Chris is going to be there. I'm going to be there as long as I don't get in trouble between now and then. I'm working on it.
It's a long way away.
I know, but I'm trying to just calm down and not get in any more trouble around here. Yeah. You can find out. Where can you go, Chris, online
to find? Cruise Catholic. No.
Not Catholic Cruise.
Excuse me. Catholic Cruise. CatholicCruise.com. I know, honestly.
May 2nd through 14th, 2026. There's also a pre-cruise adventure that you can check out in Amsterdam, but we would just love you to come. Go to CatholicCruise.com and find out all about it. CatholicCruise.com. Right now, we're listening to some audio. I've been, for years, been presenting National Public Radio audio to Joe and Chris. I don't know if you guys remember the time that we did the one on the pro-life movement, and the guy was like, they started getting together and having meetings, and they called the movement pro-life. And he said it like it was the worst thing ever. Yes. So I love bringing these little bits of audio to you guys. And now we're talking. Dave Davies on Fresh Air did an extended interview with Philip Shane on from 20 years at the New York Times. And he wrote a new book. He's author of several books. Jesus Wept, Seven Popes, and the Battle for the Soul of the Catholic Church. And now we're up to Pope Paul VI, and he asked why, Davies asked the author, why was Paul VI so against modern sexual immorality? And he listed a bunch of sexual things that he thought the church should stop being against. And was the answer A, that Paul VI thought that these immoralities would harm families? Was it B, that Paul VI wanted to maintain control over women's bodies? Or was it C, Pope Paul VI was secretly gay? Was it A, he thought that sexual immorality would harm families? B, Pope Paul VI wanted to maintain control over women's bodies? Or C, Pope Paul VI was secretly gay?
It's got to be B.
What do you say, Joe?
B is pretty dumb, is outrageous. And I think this guy doesn't. I mean, this is a guy who just discovered Latin. It's not like Jesus's native language. So,
okay.
I'm going to go with C as like, you can't make this stuff up.
So you're going to say that the guy says Paul VI was so grumpy about sexual immorality because he was secretly gay? That's what you're
I mean, this was the gay lobby that was against Paul VI taking a very firm stance on sexual morality spread rumors that he was gay as a way of trying to undermine his authority.
And you're going to say it's because he wanted to control women's bodies.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Please play clip number 5.
Oh, no.
I don't think Paul foresaw the sort of chain of events that would follow. But very quickly, he became engulfed in a scandal in Italy in which people were talking openly about rumors that he himself was gay.
Yeah. That's the level we're at.
So,
that's
yeah, level we're at. I mean, like, just,
if you, he, this is,
to
this
be
is
clear,
what, yeah, go ahead. Yes,
the,
please.
The rumors are spread by an openly gay Frenchman. I know that's not redundant. And he was
the French, the English, the Italians.
Not redundant. He was
wow.
An openly gay Frenchman who was living a disgustingly dissolute lifestyle, was a terrible critic of the church, and he's like the least reliable person you could turn to. I mean, if you said like, oh, this horrible anti-Semite has some negative things to say about the local rabbi, you're like, well, yeah, I'm gonna take that with a grain of salt. But for some reason, this is just being passed off as like, well, rumor says, on national public radio. That is actually kind of shocking.
Yeah. That's. Well, it seems to me that this is an almost adolescent, you know, I don't agree with you on sexual morality. Then you're gay. Like, that's
right.
Like, it just seems so childish. This so, is like,
it,
what
it
a,
is.
What level are we at, NPR?
I just need one of you to help me with the syllogism here, because if he were struggling with same-sex attraction, wouldn't he, or in favor of it, in fact, wouldn't he, you know, use the power of his office to commit a kind of subterfuge?
Well, no, I think
well,
this is the hydraulic theory.
This guy is of the belief the Pope can just, at his whim, reverse church teaching.
Right. So,
like that's earlier. So it is very strange. It's like saying, oh, he outlawed this because he really wanted to do this.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. Yeah, I don't know. But
right.
The fact of the matter is, if you read Humanae Vitae, Paul VI makes some predictions, all of which have come true.
Yeah, I think people have taken to calling him a prophet. They came true.
Can I point out a good article on this on a website called Catholic Answers? Catholic.com.
Is it by Joe Heschmeyer?
Tim Staples, actually.
Yeah.
The Three Prophecies of Humanae Vitae,
yeah.
Where he looks, I mean, it turns out you don't have to guess why Paul VI was worried about things like contraception.
He told you.
Because he wrote a document where he tells you.
Yes.
And then it turns out to be a pretty prophetic diagnostic of what you can expect in a world that accepts contraception.
And the abuse
And then
of
we
women.
Were like, nah, that'll never happen. We did it. We got all the negative effects. And we're like, it's probably a coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah, read that article. It's really important to see that.
The abuse of women is it one of the ones that he lists there, that he identifies.
Yeah.
The denigration.
We live in a society that, as we said last time, desperately needs Taylor Swift, because even very young women are feeling horribly abused by this society.
Yeah,
and
that
they're
makes
not
a
wrong.
Lot more sense in context, but yes.
All right. Well, I'm not going to play you any audio on Pope Benedict or Pope John Paul II, and I'll tell you why. Both of them, he covered only one topic. As one topic that covered both of them, not one topic each, one topic. So I'll just ask you this. What was the topic that covered the entire conversation about John Paul II and Benedict?
Homosexuality.
The abuse scandal.
No, it was much more specific than that. It was
transgenderism?
It was a person.
Oh.
There was a single, this his entire discussion, these two men discussing John Paul II and Pope Benedict. One person's name took up the entire discussion.
Hitler.
Nope.
Reagan.
McCarrick.
Oh.
That's it. That tells you everything you need to know about John Paul II and Benedict. There's nothing else to say. It all was about Theodore McCarrick. All right. So I'm going to play the last question.
Fascinating.
I'm going to play the last question that Davies asked now. And I'll tell you what we'll do this time. I'll let Luca play the question, clip six, please. And after he plays the question, I will do the ABC, and then you pick which one is the answer. So this is the question Davies asked the author of the book, Jesus Wept. Go ahead. You're doing great, Luca.
You know, in this book, you point out a lot of hypocrisy and corruption in the church. And some may regard the book or maybe this interview as anti-Catholic.
No.
Yeah, after all of these years of research, how do you regard the value or harm of this institution?
If I could just say once again, the slow unwinding of that question of just pure anti-Catholic nonsense. How do you regard the harm or value of this institution? Get over yourself, Davies. I mean, is the Catholic Church good or bad? He's asking. All right. So
but if you can throw in harm first, and if you can say institution, you've colored the question in a certain way, which is actually very artful.
Yeah, it's bad, it's, but it's, artful. It's do you still beat your wife?
Yeah. So here's asked by a guy that is amazed to find out Jesus didn't speak Latin to the apostles. Okay, so
is Cy Kellett horrible, or does he have good qualities?
Yeah. Right. Well, the answer to that,
no, it's,
I believe,
still horrible.
Is both. I believe it's a both. I'm a Catholic, both
all
and.
All
right?
The hypocrisy.
All right. So how does the author respond? He says, A, the church is dying, so it doesn't really matter. It will fade away in the centuries to come. Or B, the church is the greatest practitioner of charity in the world. Or C, Jesus and the apostles would be surprised and disappointed in what the church has become. So,
it's got to be C.
C for sure.
Really?
This guy understands Jesus so well, he knows he doesn't speak Latin.
He did his research.
All right, let's play clip number 7, please.
Whatever your religious background, you have to admire much of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The message of mercy and tolerance is a noble one. You don't have to be a Christian to see the wisdom of what Jesus Christ offered to the world, 2,000 years ago. That there is this institution that claims to act in his name, I think would surprise the Savior and would surprise his disciples and apostles. And I think they would be enormously disappointed by how often the Roman Catholic Church fails to live up to the message of the gospel, and how often it has allowed itself to be corrupted by very human weaknesses.
Who doesn't know human weakness well?
What?
Jesus, apparently.
Yeah, I know. The gospel said he needed no one to tell him what was in men's hearts. He's the guy that prophesied
so
that
funny.
The wheat and the chaff would grow up together. Nonetheless, he's like, I'm so disappointed in you Catholics. I thought you were going to do better than this.
So a couple things here. One is, if he'd done a little more research, he might have found some occasions of intolerance in Jesus. one or two?
Yeah, I like that he reduces Jesus' message to a coexist bumper sticker.
But here's the funny... No, this is the funny thing, though.
In this house, we believe.
He refers to...
Go ahead.
So this is the striking thing, and I'm curious who this fellow is. He refers to him as the Savior.
I know.
Yeah, I love that.
Okay, so
if he really didn't know what was going on in the church, he couldn't foresee the future, he had no clear message, and he didn't know the nature of man, that's no savior. He wants to use all the glorified language about Jesus while denying everything that makes Jesus great.
But savior refers specifically to the act at Calvary.
Yes, Calvary. Right, and he no reference to that.
Yeah, but I mean, that is how the salvation comes to pass, and so there is so there's it, by using that by describing him as the Savior, he is at least maybe not paying attention, but he's at least acknowledging there's something supernatural at work here.
Well, I think he's just using the jargon, and I think Joe's right. He's doing it to cover the fact that none of this is about Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
all of this is about
you
people are a
disappointment. You can't believe Jesus is who he says he is and mount the critiques that you're making. I think the real takeaway from this is his critiques work if you have, number one, an obsession with sex in a totally unhealthy way. Number two, a complete misunderstanding of even the basics of the Catholic Church, of the biblical presentation of Jesus. And number three, you reject Jesus's claims about himself and who he presents himself to be. And the fact that NPR is treating all of those as like neutral claims someone should just make without really challenging them on that is genuinely tragic, because you could have someone who understood any of these things and challenge them and have, I was going to say a good debate, not a good debate. You could have a thrashing. But it would at least lead people a little closer to the truth.
Do either of you think that a Catholic listening who struggles and fails and does not live up to the gospel in his or her own life, that Jesus is disappointed with them?
He knows what's in the heart of man.
Yes.
He's incredibly merciful. He's a good shepherd who comes after the lost sheep. And so, that really is. Here's the thing. Okay, we don't have time for me to get totally on my soapbox. But what makes Jesus's message so much bigger than tolerance is he doesn't tolerate sin, he heals it. And that's so much better than just enduring and tolerating it. He's actually doing something about it.
Or calling it no longer sin. Joe, right. You should get this guy on your podcast.
Which one? Yeah. Davies or the other guy?
No, not Davies. The fellow wrote the book.
Yeah. I can see why Jesus wept now after hearing about his book.
Jesus wept.
I thought we were going to get to Pius the 11th. You told me the previous seven popes. We didn't even get to Pius the 11th.
Pius the 12th is 11.
It's seven. Yeah. Oh.
Because John, remember they murdered John Paul I?
Oh, I forgot about you.
The mafia murdered.
Oh, wait, are we counting Pope Francis a previous pope?
Oh no, he just means the seven popes since or of the okay. Current era, yeah. Joe Heschmeyer, you shameless papist, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Check out Joe's work at Shameless Popery wherever you get your podcasts. Chris Check.
And pray for Pope Francis.
Oh, amen. Please do pray for Pope Francis and Chris Check, thank
you. Join the flannel panel on the Rhine 2026 CatholicCruise.com.
And NPR, you're doing great. Keep these interviews up. They are nothing but gold. That'll do it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.